Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to 2 Off the First. Great to have you here. It is October the 9th. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. We've got a good show for you today. We've got our first live guest on the show. We're going to get to him in just a minute from the Black Desert Resort in the Black Desert Championship. Brian Taylor from Real Golf Radio. Very fortunate to have him. And we're going to talk a little bit later about some comments from Rory McIlroy in a bunch of different interviews over the last week and what kind of it all means. And I think a lens of through which we can view McIlroy that maybe kind of makes some of it all make sense. And then we've got a whole bunch of different stuff to talk about. Ratings, 1 year out from the Ryder Cup, Buick LPGA Shanghai, and basically with the remnants of a hurricane going through France right now, just in time for the Open de France. But before we get to all that, let's get to our guest today. And that is Brian Taylor from Real Golf Radio. He is at the Black Desert Resort in Utah, in Ivins, Utah. Brian, thanks for being here. I appreciate it. First, can you give people a little bit of a lay of the land out there at Black Desert, where we are in the state of Utah relative to kind of other maybe cities and landmarks? And then give me the idea of what the weather's going to be like this week.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Ryan. Appreciate it. And yeah, it's awesome to be here. I'm sitting right behind the Resort Center Hotel. You can see the 19th hole right behind me. The first tee's just off my shoulder. And it's exciting. People are excited to be here. This is a long time coming. This resort's been in the making for about 4 years. We are in St. George, just outside of St. George, Utah. So if you flew into Salt Lake City, you're about a 3.5-hour drive south on I-15. If you fly into Las Vegas, you're about a 2-hour drive north on I-15. So that's kind of where we're at. Not far from here is Zion's National Park and Bryce National Park and some of those beautiful scenes here in the state of Utah. But this is a special place. This was Tom Weisskopf's 73rd and final design. Sadly, he passed away from cancer during our project. But, you know, to have the opportunity to walk through just rock hard beds of black lava and sagebrush. Even the day we were out there, he tripped and fell and cut his knee and he was bleeding. And, you know, we're still walking out there setting charges and he's somehow had a vision for what could be a championship golf course in the middle of this crazy landscape. And here we are today. There's tour pros out there walking the golf course and the fairways. The Pro-Am is underway and the tournament round gets started on Thursday. So it's remarkable. The weather is absolutely perfect. It's Palm Springs-like with lows in the low 60s and highs in the low 90s. Very little wind. It's fantastic. Golf course has been closed for about a month. So conditions are absolutely pure, and players so far, their reviews have been great.
Can you give me a little bit of an idea, go a little bit more in depth on the creation of the golf course from the topography that was there? How difficult was it? How time-consuming was it? How much of it was really beyond Weisskopf in terms of just kind of clearing land, clearing rock, clearing desert and brush to make this thing happen?
Yeah, I think most designers, they try to use what the land gives them, right? That's the ideal scenario. In this case, he tried to do that. The 16th hole, he will tell you, they had to do very little to it. It was a natural little lowland between these mounds of lava on either side. And it's a terrific par four headed straight back into Red Mountain. So you've got this you've got this black rock with these green fairways, white sand, and then you've got red mountains surrounding it. And Phil Smith said it's his architect that worked with Tom on this project. He said it's the perfect combination of Kona, Hawaii, and Sedona, Arizona. So, you know, with the black lava and the red mountains surrounding. So it was a difficult project. It took a long time to go through. Again, you're talking about really hard lava, and they tried to leave as much natural in there to play with it. But obviously, in order to put some grass down, some dirt to be able to grow the grass in the first place, you had to blast through this lava. Lots of dynamite was used, and we actually created here, the resort created their own rock quarry, where they took all of this extruded lava, they crushed it down, and that became the base for the golf course. Crushed lava drains really well, so it becomes a really nice base. for a golf course. It became the road base, and then some of the other bigger pieces are used for decor around the resort, and some of the single family homes are using that as well as they continue to build those out. So the golf course is really nice. You know, use of some long par fours for the pros, some of those which would be short par fives for the resort guests. But I had a chance to go around with some of these guys, and it's not unusual for them to have over 200 yards into some of these par fours. So it's only 7,300 yards at about 3,000 feet of elevation. So you get a little bit of help with the elevation. But at the same time, guys are coming in with six and five irons to some of these greens.
Can you give us an idea of kind of a comparison to maybe other Weisskopf courses that people might be familiar with? I think the one that probably might stand out to people who know it, which would be TPC Scottsdale, the stadium that hosts the Phoenix Open. What kind of parallels are there? How different are they from one another? Should we see some similarities between the two places?
I think that's a good question. As far as TPC, you know, I would say that's more of a traditional desert golf course, where Black Desert is sort of a hybrid desert golf course, right? I mean, it's not your traditional, and here's one of the main points, is on a traditional desert golf course, you can often go out into the desert and play that shot, right? We'll all remember Tiger Woods having an army move a boulder so he could go ahead and play away. You don't have that luxury here at Black Desert. If you're off the fairway, if you're not in the grass, you're lost. Essentially, you're unplayable in your re-hitting, right? So, but you know, I think you're going to see, well, one of the things that's, I think, really unique to Black Desert is a collection of short par threes. And you've got two of them that are really short. They're going to be wedge or short wedge. And you've got two that play right around 185 to 200 yards, but that's it. There aren't any par fours that are longer than that. I think that's one of the neat design characteristics that the Weisskopf made at least from my vantage point. I think it's much more of a architectural creation if you can have a short par three that will hold your attention than if you just make something hard because it's long. And so I think that's what you'll see here. One of the unique things, the third hole, it's a par three that's similar to the sixth hole at Riviera, where it has a bunker right in the middle of it. And so that's something he took from that. The 17th hole, he said he used the postage stamp where he won the Open Championship at Royal Troon as his kind of design inspiration. So, and that's a very, very short hole. So yeah, I think you're going to see some familiarity if you're playing Weisskopf courses. The very playable. There's a couple holes where with the first time you play it, you're not sure exactly what the line is off the tee. Once you get past that, everything's pretty much right in front of you.
How generous are the landing areas on the par fours and par fives? You know, people hear desert, Black Desert rock, and they hear that's instant OB for a lot of people. But for professional golfers, obviously, that's a different way of thinking about it. So how wide are the landing areas in reality for the players? And are we going to see a fair number of layups off the tee to perhaps avoid certain narrowings of landing areas?
Yeah, I think from the back tees, the tournament tees, you know, when we put this golf course in originally, I say we, sorry, I'm also part of the development as well as the radio show, but we had, once the tour came on board, I think we've added seven or eight new tee boxes. And so they wanted to lengthen it out. The 11th hole is a good example. Tom Weisskopf narrated the holes. So if you come out here as a resort guest, you'll hear Tom's voice kind of narrating the holes. And on 11, he said, hey, I want to make sure you play the correct tee box here, because if you do, your tee shot will get down the hill and you'll have a nice wedge into a kind of small, difficult green with a water feature on the right-hand side. The tour pros, they're about 340 to that hill. And so it's a carry. And the guys that I played with in the morning, not played with, but walked around with as they were playing practice rounds, they were 20, 30 yards short of getting to that hill. And so they're coming in at 200 plus yards to a really tall or small landing area. And so I think the 12th hole follows that up. A lot of guys, if you're playing the normal back tees, you'll take driver over the right bunker, and that'll leave you with a short iron in. These guys were electing to hit three wood, and a lot of players will, to keep it short of the lava incropping, where, as you said, it narrows in. And because, again, if you're playing with $9, $10 million on the line here, you know, you can't necessarily afford to hit it in the rocks and take a double bogey. So as these guys said, you play from the grass, there's birdies. You don't play from the grass, there's double bogeys. And so that's kind of the lay. And I think you'll see some guys that are play a little more conservatively. The fairways in a lot of the landing areas are 80 yards wide. They're very generous, so there's plenty of room. Like I said, you miss the grass, you're out of luck. But if you've got plenty of room to hit it, especially for the skill level of a tour player.
Should bring up too, the LPGA will be coming to Black Desert. The resort has committed a lot of resources to having both the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour play there. Has there been thought given to how differently the course might play for the LPGA than the PGA Tour?
Yeah, that's brilliant design by Weisskopf, because he essentially set the golf course up to play, you know, generous for the resort guests. And then also have some really tough lines the further back you go. So I think it plays, I'll tell you, I've taken some guys out here that are, you know, 5-6 handicaps, and they're struggling. They think it looks tight off the tee. So, it can be challenging. So from the ladies' standpoint, I think you're going to see them. Obviously, they're going to play it up, right? They won't play it as far back as the PGA Tour players, but I think you'll see them, especially some of the longer ladies, they'll do what you and I would do, right? And they'll take it over the corners of some of these things, and they'll challenge the spaces to be able to get a little shorter iron in. So I haven't seen the exact setup for the ladies, but they're going to love it. I mean, my point in what I was trying to set up there is regardless of how far back you play it, it presents a really good test, right? And in fact, the tour guys that I was with, they just kept kind of chuckling, saying, "Hey, this, they'd knock it on a what would be a par five for the members or the guests, and they'd say, I got a nice eagle putt here, you know, even though they're putting for birdie on the tour. These guys, I think they get weary of really long 500 plus yard par fours. So the ladies are going to love it. And by the way, that we are going to set up this whole tournament, we want it to be an experience unlike anything they have on LPGA Tour. Patrick, as our on-site managing partner, is committed to women's golf. We have some sponsorships to some Epson Tour players and some upcoming high school girls that practice and play right out of Black Desert, and he wants this to be a world-class experience when the ladies show up here next May, and we're excited to welcome them here.
All right, one last thing about the tournament, and then one more question, which is what are you expecting? If I made you guess, what would you think a winning score would be here at the end of the week for this Black Desert Championship?
I think it's going to be 23. It's a par 71, so that's going to help a little bit. But, you know, ideal, like I said, generous off the tee, perfect conditions. I think these guys will take advantage of it. You're not going to have much wind. If the wind were to pick up and blow 20, it would change things dramatically, like most golf courses. But in the case here, I think at 3,000 feet, 7,300 yards, you know, the bigger hitters, you don't have to have that. I talked to Patrick Fishburne. He's a local guy here, and he's a tour player as well as one of the longer hitters. He's not going to hit a ton of drivers. He can get around this thing with three wood, no problem. But it always helps to have that little extra gear, doesn't it? And so I think you're going to see some long hitters take advantage of it. Currently, Mike Weir holds the course record 66. I think that will only stand until the first round is complete. And then I think that one will be broken. That's just my prediction. But it wouldn't surprise me, Ry, if we see a 60 out there or a 61. I just think guys can light it up.
All right, last one for you. Jadon Blake is maybe a surprise to people that he's on the field list this week, but the reason he's in the field and got an exemption is for a special milestone, 500 PGA Tour starts. What's kind of his attitude been toward this opportunity? It's not like he was surprised by it in the first place. So how's he feeling about getting this chance to nudge number 500?
Yeah, I had a chance to play golf with him after he'd received it. He was so humble and grateful. This is a pro that's, as you said, teeing it up for the 500th time on the PGA Tour. He's St. George born and raised. And so to have a PGA Tour event right here in his backyard and for him to be able to be a part of it, he took it. He got very emotional. You can see the video on PGA Tour. But he got very emotional. His family was all around him. And you know what? I'll tell you this about Jadon. When we played in this pro-am about a month ago, you know, he showed up. He was as hip as the 19-year-olds out here, man. He had blue all head to toe. He was looking all decked out. And we were playing the same tees. And I hit one. I was like, finally, there we go. Got into that one. He was 10 by me. And I was like, okay, all right, Jadon, let's go. I mean, I would say he hit that one probably about 310. And, he's 65 years old. So I think it's neat to have him out here. It's a nice tribute for Jadon, and he's super appreciative. And I think, you know, there's nine players with Utah ties this week. And so it's kind of cool to kind of mix that in with the PGA Tour pros that are here.
Well, BT, thanks for hopping on with me. I appreciate it. I hope you have a great week out there. Maybe we can have you on again over the course of the next couple of days and chat a little bit more about this event. It's really cool to have the PGA Tour back in Utah after 60 years of not being there. All kinds of great players out of Utah in history, and the PGA Tour is back is a great thing. So thank you for coming on, giving us the lay of the land, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Anytime.
All right, that's Brian Taylor from Real Golf Radio. You can also catch Real Golf Radio on Golf News Net Radio. Go to Golf News Net Radio over at golfnewsnet.com. You can listen to it every Saturday morning and afternoon, and also late on Sunday. We have a 7-hour loop, 8-hour loop, actually. We air on Saturdays with Real Golf Radio. Great 2-hour show that Brian does with Bob Casper. Check that out on GNN Radio or wherever you get your podcasts, and you can catch them on their radio network as well, realgolfradio.com. All right, let's get back into some of the rest of the stuff that we're going to cover on today's episode, and that includes some comments from Rory McIlroy made in various publications over the course of the last week. Some of them more benign than others. I think they're all generally benign. Nothing kind of really hard going at anybody here. Some comments made at the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship last week, which is the event that was going on the DP World Tour while I was out in Indiana, the Corn Ferry Tour Championship. And then some comments made in an interview with Kyle Porter, who is now moved on from CBS and is running his company, Normal Sport. Very excited for him to drive into the independent media world, and he's doing it with a bang. Give him a follow at Kyle Porter NS, not Kyle Porter CBS, Kyle Porter NS on X. Part of that interview, that we'll start with that. So Rory kind of gets asked a question where he kind of goes off on a little bit of a tangent, and he kind of talks about what he thinks golf media should be doing in terms of reporting, and really kind of get it's a long answer. It's kind of a long-winded answer. I think he's trying to work around a question he doesn't have a good answer for inherently, so he's trying to offer this as a thought, where he says kind of the golf media needs to be more positive. There are people in golf media who are just so darn negative and mad all the time, and they're unhappy, and nothing will please them, and all they say is bad things, and why are they talking about the positive things? And I think McIlroy said this because he has been on the receiving end of a lot of stuff over the course of his career, and certainly the last 3, 4, or 5 years, really since the idea of the Premier Golf League came out, and then the Super Saudi Golf League, which turned into LIV, that came out, and then he got very actively involved as a vocal voice against Norman and LIV, and being on the board, and now off the board, and now on the committee, the negotiation committee with the Saudis. He's heard it all, right? He's heard and seen it all. And I'm sure he's sick of dealing with all of that. He just wants to hear some nice stuff coming his way. Hey, Rory, you're great. Not, hey, you can't win enough. You don't win enough. Why do you break our hearts so much? Why can't you get anything done with the Saudis? Why is Liv still around? I mean, there's a lot of things that you could throw at Rory McIlroy and go, these are things that are on you that are bad. And I think inherently anyone wants to hear, hey, pretty good, and he is really good. He's one of the best golfers on the planet, and he's also a very thoughtful person. But I also notice from McIlroy that there are times when he just kind of says what he feels in that second, and I think that's a thread that carries through a lot of the stuff over the course of his career, is that when you hear something, you want to he responds to it in a way that he feels at that moment. He doesn't necessarily think about what the long-term game is to that answer, or try to offer something that's not revelatory, but substantial. He wants to give you what he thinks. And that is a good thing. And I'm never going to rake him over the coals for that. But it also leads to some responses that sound hypocritical at times, or like a changing in position. A lot of folks on the LIV side of things go, oh, well, he's changed his mind about LIV. It turns out he's been really consistent about it if you actually read what he says. But in the whole, in the main, maybe the tone changes from minute to minute how things are going. But in the main, I think he's been pretty consistent on that issue. And McIlroy being a kind of feeling talker, he talks what he feels, that can get him into a position where you get quoted and you go, well, that, why'd you say that? That doesn't sound right or sounds different. And I don't want that to go away. That's just kind of what leads to these types of situations where you say something that just kind of, it doesn't sound nonsensical. Maybe insensitive, not so much that. Maybe just contradictory at times. But McIlroy can have any view that he wants of media. I'm not here to tell him he can't. You can have whatever view if you want in media. I'm not here to tell you that you can't. what I'm here to say is that I think what the more you listen to Rory McIlroy, the more you realize he has a long-term thought, but he doesn't have a long-term plan in everything that he says. And he's trying to usher golf to a place where he wants to move on from all of this. He wants LIV to go away. And he wants whatever's going to happen with the Saudis to happen. He would prefer they get involved and invest their money at this point if they're going to put their money into golf. And he's been pretty consistent about that. But he wants all that strife to go away too. He wants the players that he thinks should be relevant to come back to the PGA Tour. He thinks about the Brookses and the Brysons and the John Rahms and the Tyrrell Hattons of the world, the Cam Smiths of the world. Those guys that still really care about golf and still want to achieve and are achieving at a high level. Maybe not so much the Phils, maybe not so much the DJs. DJ kind of checks out at times, but then checks back in, interestingly enough. So he's trying to figure all of that out. Yet at the same time, in an interview, I think it was with the Scotsman, he says he loves playing DP World Tour events because they feel less corporate, feels more pure golf, it feels less entertainment, more sport. And I agree with him, having covered pretty much every major tour on the planet of the five, except I've never been to a LIV event, I will say that. But of all of those, the ones that I've been to, the most pure, so to speak, are not the PGA Tour. I would tell you the LPGA is very much a pure operation. I would tell you the DP World Tour feels like a pure operation in terms of just pure golf. Yeah. I feel like the LPGA is maybe leaned a little bit more into the entertainment side of things, but not to an outrageous degree. The Korn Ferry Tour is very much golf. I mean, you were there to watch players play, grind it out, figure it out. It was some of the most entertaining golf experiences I've had in a long time, being able to watch the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. DP World Tour feels the same way. Going to the Irish Open, going to their version of the Ryder Cup when they host, even that felt a little bit more like pure golf than the Americanized version of the Ryder Cup, which is very corporate, designed to make a lot of money, designed to kind of overwhelm the senses, and not necessarily just with the golf that's being played. So I find that view very interesting, that he wants something less corporate and more pure, while at the same time wanting the money that's coming in to be settled, and that money is going to have consequences and attachments to it that's going to make it more like the PGA Tour ratcheted up. And that may then ultimately affect the DP World Tour, how LIV is presented or exists at all, or whether it's a team series, all of that comes into effect. So I find that super interesting, but wanted to talk about that for a few minutes. Couple loose ends to wrap up. Some ratings from over the weekend for the Sanderson Farms. Sub 100,000, I think it was like 85,000 viewers on Saturday. A slight increase, I think 3,000 viewers on Sunday, probably because there was a playoff between Bo Hostler and Kevin Yu. Kevin Yu won. It's not a Kevin Yu equals ratings, even though I sarcastically tweeted that. So those are the ratings. That's your baseline. It's like 100,000 people watching fall golf right now on television, on Golf Channel. Just a couple of years ago, that was more like 300,000. It has been a precipitous drop in fall golf. That doesn't mean it should go away. That doesn't mean it's useless. It just means what that amounts to for sponsors and players is now more divergent than ever. For players, it is a chance to get in that top 10 or stay in the top 125, whether you get signature starts, whether you keep your card, that's all relevant and important. From a business standpoint, that's going to mean lower purses, more like you see at the Pro Core Championship, like $6 million, $5, $6 million, compared to $7.5, $8, $9, $10 million you were starting to see in the fall when it was part of the FedEx Cup, as the full FedEx Cup, not the FedEx Cup fall. That's something we're going to see here over the next probably couple of years as contracts change and move. That's a big deal. And that people have largely said, hey, you know, I'll watch it if it's on, but I'm probably not trying to seek it out. And as cable subscriptions dramatically decrease by the month, that's going to be a harder sell to get people to watch it, because you're not going to be able to find it on Golf Channel. You're going to have to pay for Peacock for it. If you don't want to pay for Peacock to get the Golf Channel, or you're not paying for it otherwise, you're not going to find it. So that viewership number is going to be impacted pretty negatively. We got the 1 year out heads up from the Ryder Cup folks on the U.S. side about the qualifying. It's not different, really, than the last time out. 2024 events that were already held, you get 1 point per $1,000 earned for a made cut at the players in the four majors. In 2025, You'll get 1.5 points per $1,000 earned for a made cut in the four majors. Players doesn't count. And in every other PGA Tour event that is not an Oppo field, no Oppo field points, but in regular events in the players and the signature events, the PGA Tour playoff events through the BMW Championship, you're going to get 1 point per $1,000 earned, with the thinking that the purses in the signature events, purses in the playoffs, purses in the majors obviously kind of speak for themselves. Players get majors get elevated status, but the players being the biggest purse on the PGA Tour by far, that means it kind of offsets not getting that 1.5 points per $1,000 earned. So there's that. We also got some more news about the what's now going to be called the showdown. It's not going to be called the match. It's not part of that series, not part of that canon, between Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy taking on Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka. That's going to happen at Shadow Creek. It's going to be an 18-hole match. It released all the kind of stuff about that. We'll put some details about that at golfnewsnet.com as well as our socials. That's pretty much everything today. It was really cool to have Brian Taylor with us. Thanks so much to BT for joining us. First guest segment ever on Two Off the First, especially as a live show. So we're figuring this thing out. Some more news on the TV front. We have three contracts signed for our first three platforms, working those out, getting connected to them. We'll have those OTT apps updated for Amazon, Fire, Apple TV, and Roku. We'll give you those details very soon, which is also exciting. You'll be able to watch GNN TV on your TV or any device 24/7 with the services that we're connecting to and also those apps. Back with another show tomorrow. We tried to do one more since we couldn't do it on Monday, traveling home. We'll also have a new version of the Road to French Lick, new episode of that, probably coming out tomorrow for you. We'll wrap up the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, bunch of stuff on site. Shout out to Brendan Sweeney, who is my co-host for the show with the French Lick Resort. He's down in Orlando right now, hunkering down with Hurricane Milton. He lives right in the downtown Orlando area. We're thinking of you. Hopefully you're doing okay. Anyone else who's watching from the Florida area or in the path of the hurricane, we're thinking of you. Hopefully it goes as well as it possibly can for you. Hopefully you got out of the way if you need to. And hopefully we can bring you a little bit of entertainment for the time that you're catching us. And also I wanted to give just a quick shout out as well to everyone at the French Lick Resort that was so hospitable and wonderful, as they always are, for the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. From everybody at the resort, the golf team, Dave Harner and his group, everyone who worked on the tournament side was great. Even the folks of the PGA Tour, PGA Tour Entertainment, Golf Channel, was great to get to spend some time with them and get to celebrate the season. Shout out to Yoon and Moomoo's in town. Incredible restaurant if you're ever in French Lick. Be there every day of your stay. You're going to be very happy. I think that's all the thank yous. I think that's all the shout outs for today. Very much appreciate you tuning in, whether you're watching the live stream, whether you're watching after the fact, or listening after the fact as a podcast. Very much appreciate it. Back with another show tomorrow. See you next time on Two Off the First. Have a great day, everybody.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.